You don't want to stick around there.
That's good. Great. As much detail of that because one thing is I'm trying to get the children to maybe do, they're trying to do little plays of things. So that first meeting, recreating that first meeting,
yeah,
would be quite interesting. And obviously, there's no way I'm going to invent it. I'm not, no. Do you know what I mean? But I've heard it from Marion.
Yeah.
And now you, like, I think Linda. So...
Yeah.
You know, if we could just hear a few, like, live, whatever you remember. So you
remember
being there.
You want me to start from the beginning when I moved in?
No. I'm just going through general things with you because
right.
I won't be interrupting, just to get your memory going.
Right.
Because I won't be interrupting, well, you know, unless you feel you want to stop. So, yeah, because if I prep you like this, it means that we can go through it and we won't be here long.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because some people forget. And some people are really good at just going on.
Yeah.
And someone like Les needs people to talk to. Do you know what I mean?
I love Les.
I know. If Les has got an audience,
he's
off.
He's also been on the stage. He had.
Oh, he's amazing. But when I had him here, he was actually a little bit shy, a bit.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? He was a little bit like trying to remember things. But when he's got people and he's telling people a story, he's the best there is.
Yeah.
So were you in the same association? So how did you get involved in all this then?
Oh.
Was it after?
Yeah. I moved in 79. And I think it was about 82, 83. We just had the garage built on the side of the house. And a letter come round saying that they were knocking them all down.
Right.
And all I was worried about was my garage. I didn't think about the house really because... Never had a garage in my home before. I wanted a garage. And the next door neighbour to me had bought their house, and the other two were still council houses. So we weren't really that worried.
Right.
And then we heard there was a meeting. So I don't think we'd been invited to it because we were owner occupiers and it was only the houses that had got to come down, I think. So... We sort of gate crashed it and it was mad. People were crying, some people were swearing and screaming at people, you're not touching my house. And, you know, it was general mayhem, so we come out.
And what were you doing, Teresa?
Sorry?
What were you doing?
Well, I was just trying to hear, really, because we were just thinking, we can't say anything because we're not supposed to be here, you know what I mean? And we come out thinking, well, it's not going to happen. I mean, they're not going to do it. And then...
Why did you think that?
Because everybody was fighting against it. Nobody
wanted
it. Oh,
you felt there was so much opposition.
Yeah. Because it was a lovely estate. I mean, you wouldn't get people parking on the green parts of the estate. And you wouldn't get no rubbish around here. Everybody cleaned up. And it was very much people that had moved in as the houses was built. So they were...
They'd been here from...
They'd been here from like
39.
Yeah. Mm. The odd ones had sold, bought the house off the council.
Right.
Sold and perhaps moved away or passed away, whichever. And there was new people coming in. But it was predominantly white and predominantly elderly, really. But it was lovely and quiet.
Mm.
We're
going to start because you're on a good flow now. Okay, so sorry about this. I'm learning how to do it. Okay. So what I have to do is to say this is the 22nd of February, 2016. We are sitting in the first floor lounge of Sycamore Court and I am speaking to Teresa Compton. That is your name.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And what this is an oral heritage recording for the Perry Common and Me Local History Project. You know, we're going to, as much as possible, just listen to your memories and what you would like to say, what you feel comfortable relaying for, you know, for people to know what really happened and your involvement here. We will, when the project is over, everything will be tabulated and deposited in archives, in the local history group, online, as well as deposited in the Birmingham City Library archives. But before we do that, we will give you an opportunity to see a summary of your transcripts and also the video. And if there's anything you would like to omit or you would like to add, you'll be given that opportunity before we go ahead. Is that okay, Teresa?
That's fine.
Are you happy with me calling you Teresa, or may I call you Mrs. Compton?
Oh, no.
Okay, then. It's a real pleasure to spend some time with you. So if we can just start with your first recollection or your first engagement with Perry Common, and if you can give dates, that would be really great.
I first came down and looked at the house that we're in now in June 1979. First impression was, I don't want to move. The toilet's outside, it needs all modernising. I don't want to move. My husband talked me into it, and I'm glad I did. We moved in. I got two children, one was just 16 and the other one was 14. And they thought it was quite a novelty to go to the toilet outside. But come winter, they changed their minds. First thing we did was redo the bathroom and put the toilet inside. Then we did the kitchen, and then we had a garage built. Oh, and that was wonderful. And then we went on holiday, and I think it was 82, 83... came back to a letter saying they were going to knock the house down. I'm not knocking my house down, I've just bought a garage. Anyway, there was a meeting at some point that I went to. I don't think I was invited.
I'm so sorry, they're just making noise. Because it all goes... That was fantastic, Teresa. That was great. Could you just go back, please, and let us know a little bit more about just what life was like? I know it was only 79 to... Was it 82, the first letter 82, came?
82, 83. I'm just trying to
I thought it was further down.
3 years. Yeah, but this was when they were saying that they were going to take the houses down. There was no plan on what was going to happen to all of us that lived on the estate that was predominantly elderly, that had been in the properties from when they were built. Younger ones was just coming in because people had either left or passed away and the houses had become empty. I think really the council was selling them off as well, because that saved them doing anything and they really needed modernising. Then when the letter came that they were knocking it down, I remember going to a first meeting, but I can't remember exactly the date. And they were saying they were going to knock it down, and people saying, you're not touching my house. I've done this to it, and I've done that to it. And people was crying, and people was screaming at them. I mean, my neighbour said, not for us. It's not going to happen. It's too much opposition anyway. And what they're going to do with all the people, don't worry about it. And then we started to hear about more that was going on. And then someone came round with a petition, I can remember that, and saying, do you own your own house, or are you council? And I said, we're buying it. And I said, well, that's all right, because it won't affect you, because they can't take your house off you, and all this. And then we heard that they was going to start knocking them down. They knocked the first phrase down, but they had no plan then what they were going to do with the people. This is what I heard. People were being moved off the estate and then the houses were going to be knocked down. And then the first phrase was built. I can't remember the number. I know that the houses round by me, that backed onto the recreation ground on Dovedale Road, they started emptying those houses and people were still moving into them. They were sort of doing them up, so that where they wanted the next phrase knocked down from, they were putting them people in. So they were decamping people if they wanted to stay on the estate. Because by this time they'd sort of promised that if you stayed on the estate, you were guaranteed like-for-like property. But if you moved off the estate when the new properties was built, you could not move back. So out of about, I think, 100 and something houses, we lost about 90-something residents. Because the others, there was no guarantee what the house is going to look like, because that was the first question. Well, what's my house going to look like? Where's it going to be? And I was saying, well, we don't know yet. We've got to design them and they've got to be built. So they said, oh, no. So they were moving out. They were either selling back to the council and then moving out, or the council was moving them to other council properties around the area, or if they were decamped, they stayed on the estate. This went on for quite some while, and then I was a home help on here for a few years on the estate, and I was still going round to residents that had moved in at the time they were built, and the toilets were still outside and that. And then I remember going to one lady, and they was bringing her toilet inside, and what they did, they turned round the existing toilet, they bricked up the door and put a window in and opened it up from the kitchen side. And then she said to me, my grandson's buying the house across the road that's empty. And I said, oh, lovely. And then the next time I went, she said, he can't have it because it's falling to pieces. And I laughed and I said, what do you mean it's falling to pieces? She said, well, you know, there's concrete, they're concrete built and there's steel rods in them. Well, they're all corroding and the houses are falling in to each other. And that's why they were knocked down, because the water had got in and corroded the metal strips, whatever they are, that hold the concrete together, and then they were falling in, and you were seeing them, the walls and the doors was wonky, you couldn't shut a door inside, or, and then you could see that the roofs was falling in. It was quite frightening, really, when you look round the estate and thinking, is this one going to fall down next, you know? But then they said they wasn't going to take down the brick-built houses, and they were starting to have consultations. And that's when I sort of got involved. I went to the consultation, and I asked, I think it was Ron Williams, who was on the estate, and I said to him, well, what's going to happen in the back of my house? And are you going to take my house off me? And he asked me where I lived, and I told him I lived on Witten Lodge in the brick-built houses. And he said no, but they were going to build on the recreation ground. And I said, well, how many houses are you going to put on there? He said, well, we don't know yet because we're going through the estate. So then Linda Hines said, well, if you want to know more, why don't you join the committee? And that's when I got involved with that. Sometimes I wish I'd never opened my mouth, and other times I wanted to know more because I was interested in the properties and I was interested in the estate. It had been a lovely estate, very quiet, pleasant when I moved in here. The recreation ground was well used. We had football on it over weekend. There was a brick-built changing room down the end. There were swings, roundabout, witches' hats, slides. And I loved all that because I could walk out and just walk down the park. And it was lovely. And then they took the slides away. I missed the slides and the swings. And then we sort of got involved with what was going on. And one of the things I was quite passionate about was the greenery. Because everywhere you go, you'd got people wanting to go and play on the park and stuff like that. Well, where they knocked the houses down, they made little parks. There's one off the College Road, just joining the College Road to Hastings Road. There's one as you come down from Sycamore Court. There's a green area leading onto the recreation ground. And of course, we've got the ring, which there was no railings around that at the time, and we applied for some funding to put railings around there. and was told we'd got to have planning permission. Ha ha ha. They wanted money for that. So we asked around. One of the ladies who lives on the ring was playing on the ring as a 5-year-old when the railings was all there, and there was a brick building on there with toilets on. So we went back to the council and we said, there was railings on here before. I said, oh, no, no, no. Yes, there was. They were taken around down for the war effort. So we didn't need planning permission to put them back up. And we got the funding to do it. So then that became known as another little park, really. There was a bit of a scare at one time. They were going to put a gym on it. You know, the outdoor gyms that are around the city centre, they were going to put one of them on. But according to the neighbours and the tittle-tattle, it was going to be a full-size gym where people was going to come and drive up and go to the gym and drive off. It was nothing like that, and it was bedlam. Now, I remember that consultation in the community centre. That was bedlam. It was people shouting, we don't want that sort round here. Come in and park in the cars and go into the gym, and we won't know who's living around here. We kept saying, it's not a gym. It's not going to be a brick building. They're going to cut our trees down. They're not going to cut the trees down. It's just going to be an outdoor gym, and it gives the young people something to do. But they didn't want it. So it got squashed. Then there was another piece of land, the back of the church. It's on the slope. Nobody wanted to build on that. So that is now Enderby Park. And it has a gym on it. An outdoor gym. We've got the swings, we've got the... I'm not sure what they're all called, but they are all there. And they're all being well used. There has been a bit of vandalism there. But it's settled down now, and it's pretty well used, really. Because they can cut through the park to go to school. Which is a good thing when we're walking the children to school, because it's all built up round there now. They can walk the children up there, they can walk up to the school, carry on walking up a little bit, go down the road by Hastings Road and walk through that and get to the main shops on College Road. So it all interlinks. And the last phrase of it is they're going to build the back of my house on the recreation ground, and they're putting 146 properties on there. Which I'm not really happy about, because with the new properties they've built on Dovedale Road, Capilano, and I think it's Wendover, they all go onto the recreation ground for play. So it's going to take a lot of that land off people that want to go and play on there. I know we've got Witten Lake Spritz across the main road. We've got a little bit of recreation between Sycamore Court and the recreation ground, and we've got Enderby Park, and we've got the other little park, which, sorry, I can't remember the name of it, but it joins Hastings Road and College Road. They're all very nice, but they're not going to have a big football pitch on there. Like, we had 3 football pitches on there, and every Sunday morning you could hear the roar of them and that, you know, and that's what it was all about. People came down and they'd come down with the kids and watch them play football, and then the teenagers would be playing football, and there'd be picnics on there, and it was really nice. I quite miss that, actually. I know it's noise, but it was nice noise, if you know what I mean. It was people enjoying themselves but not causing any damage. So down the bottom of the recreation ground now, we've got one of these football cages, and they come and play on that. But I can't see that from my house. One of the other things we was doing at one time, we got the schedule for what the council did. And this chap kept saying, oh, well, we have to do this on the recreation ground and that on the recreation ground. And I said to him, what do you have to do? He says, well, we have to service the swings, and we have to check everything else is all right. And I said, swings aren't there. I said, where are the swings? He said, down the bottom by the school. So somebody said to me, you live by the recreation ground, you know where they are. I said, no, my dog died 2 years ago. I said, no, they certainly wasn't there then. And he said, oh yes they are, the swings are there, they're cleaned every other day. I said, no they're not, you come and take me down and show me where they are. And we'd been paying and that council tax for them swings to be swept and serviced for how many years? Don't know. But we've got 25,000 daffodil bulbs off them to plant on the ring. I thought that was a good change. So when you see there all those daffodils coming up on the ring and on the recreation ground, you know that's because the council have been having money off us to clean the swings up that weren't there.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Because I used to take my dog down there and have a swing on the swings because they were the big old fashioned swings. And the kids would be playing on them and I'd say, give us a go, like, you know. They thought it was funny, old codger wanting to go on the swings. But I used to have a swing on there. And they had changing rooms down there for all the people that played football, and the schools come down and played football on there. It was vandalism. They got rid of the, I suppose, the park keeper looked after the buildings and that. And that disappeared, and then the swings and the witch's hat and the one that you stand on and whiz everybody around on. You know, that was great fun.
You describe very well the community, the residents getting involved in what happens in their environment. You've given a few stories about that. Do you remember the old community hall and what activities went on there?
Yeah. A couple run the community hall for donkey's years. Jan and John and Jan, I think it was. And then they gave it up and then Witten Lodge took it over. And I sort of become caretaker. I used to open it up for the events and that and get children's parties there, and I'd go and open it up and then I'd come away and I'd go and close it up, make sure it was all right. And then we applied for funding from the big lottery. We applied for 60,000. We didn't get it because originally we wanted to build on top of it, so Witten Lodge's offices would be on the top. And then all the community hall would be all revamped and probably have a little cafe in there, have the hall divided into two with so that it could be different things going on each side of the hall. And that didn't happen. So Witten Lodge had their offices built. We got some funding and Witten Lodge put 300,000 in and we got 250,000, I think, which meant we couldn't go up. But it's as it is now. But now they're having the dividing wall put in because I insisted that if we couldn't have it, we had the beams in ready so that when we raised the funds, we didn't have to destroy the ceiling. And that's what's being done now.
So you can, they can build up?
No, they're not building up. But in the hall, it's going to be divided into two. So that it can be opened up, but it's going to have doors that will open up to make it one, but can close it off so that if you've got a class doing a meeting either side, hopefully it'll be soundproofed, otherwise we're going to have to learn sign language.
What was it like? What type of activity? I'm interested in the old, and then we can describe the new, the change.
Right. Well, they used to have bingo there once a week. They had dancing there on a Tuesday. They had a choir on Monday. They had dancing on Tuesday. This is when I was doing it. Wednesday was IKEA, or martial arts. Thursday they had a slimming club. Friday they had a junior dance club, and Saturday and Sunday they used to have parties, you know, if they was booked. But I also had, now you laugh at me, a wrestler in there on a Sunday. And he was lovely. He used to train. It was only about four of them used to go in. But if somebody specifically wanted a birthday party on the Sunday, he was in from six till nine. And I used to ring him up and I used to say, do you really want to come on Sunday? And he'd go, what do you want now, Teresa? And I'd say, well, somebody wants a party. Okay, what time do they want the party? And I'd say, well, they want from two till seven. Okay, not to worry, I'll come in from eight till ten. Or I'll come in Saturday. He was very obliging. He would swap his day round to suit, because he knew that we needed the money that we were getting from the parties to subsidise everything else, really. So he was really good about it. And, you know, he was like a big gentle giant.
What year was this?
Just before the hall was closed. Now, it was closed for about 18 months, 2 years. So it's been open for... So we're looking at... let me get my figures right. 16 now, isn't it? So it's been out in four. I think it's been out in 4 years. So that'd be 12. So it was sort of 2009.
Okay, so the community... Right. Can you tell me then a little bit about the different associations? If you know, I know there was North, East, South and West. Can you tell me about that period before it became Witton Lodge?
Yeah. The estate was so big, because there was 1,008 houses, I think, on it. It was too big to have a meeting for everybody. So it was divided into four. And each one had a residence group. And the residence group used to meet once a month, I think. Could go to each other's residence group, the management part could, so we knew what was going on. And as the houses got knocked down and the size of them got smaller, they amalgamated like North and South, or, you know. So it got smaller and smaller, and then finally the last bit, there was only a few left really, of the original ones. So by this time the council had offered Witton Lodge, and it was called Witton Lodge Association because there was Witton Lodge Residency Association, so they couldn't use the name, or it was very common, I can't remember. But the council gave them training to become Witton Lodge, the association, and a lot of the people that was on the residence group was on Witton Lodge's board to start with. So it was formed, I think, about 1986. I can't really remember the dates on that because the brain's getting a bit foggy.
Do you remember, I understand that during the demolition, when the houses were coming down, it was quite a time. Can you describe that in as much detail? Any stories, incidents? I understand there were rats, sewers, rubbish was being tipped down from Sutton Coatfield.
Oh, yes. Well, that was a good one. Somebody caught them. Everywhere that was empty, people were getting money, you may, off the council to move out. So anything they didn't want, they left in the house. Well, because we have a lot of lovely young people around, don't we? And they go in the house and they bring the settee out and they sniff the glue and all havoc is ruined. And the fire engines, they must have been run off the feet because they were always starting fires in all the houses. Then we had the nice tatters around that took all the piping out. So there was water spewing out everywhere. And then this one lady was coming out to a meeting one day. I remember her quite vividly. She's passed away now. But she came out and she seen somebody pull up in a car and dump all the rubbish. So she run back in and she said to her son, come here, they're dumping rubbish. So he said, I'll go and have them. She said, no, don't have them. Get in your car and we'll follow them. And they followed them back to Sutton Coldfield. Nice posh house. Nice grounds. So they come back, they collected all the rubbish in the car and they went back and dumped it on his drive and rung his doorbell and said, you've left this in our area. Now you keep it. And that was the end of that. Then we decided, because there was so much rubbish around at one point, we decided to have some skips around the area. The skips came Friday morning and they were supposed to be collected on the Monday. For people who couldn't get to the tip, they could get down and put the rubbish in it. Well, did it happen? Oh, the skips arrived, so did the junk merchants. We had engines dumped in them. We had old tyres dumped in them. It was all over the place. It was complete havoc. We never do that again. They had to come and collect them, some of them, on the Saturday and the Sunday, because people was just dumping everything. It wasn't general household rubbish. It was builders' merchants coming along. Oh, there's a skip there. Dump the old bath in it, on the blower, tell the mates, dump this, and it was havoc. By Friday dinner time, they were all completely full, and hardly any of it was people's old furniture that they wanted to get rid of. So, that was a mistake, wasn't it? We didn't do that one again. But, you know, the fire engines was run off the feet with them starting fires. And the kids, you know, having parties with the glue sniffing. I think that's sort of gone out now. I think the cannabis is in it. But we don't see much of that now. One time, it was really bad because the drug dealers were starting to move in. I mean, they used to get on to the church steps and try and sell it down there on the church steps, on the little wall outside by the bus stop. But got rid of that now. We've got the PSOs and, you know, the community pulled together that was here and reported anything that we're seeing, and it's cleaned it up. Touch wood, don't see it now.
How long did this period last of the what I call the demolition era?
Quite a long time, really. I mean, the recreation ground, Dovedale Road and Capilano Road, they were the last ones really to go. And Dovedale Road, the other side, we had a party there. I remember the party because it was the last house that was being pulled down. And I know it was February the 16th because that's my wedding anniversary. And we had a little party in the street. We had 908 balloons that we sold. And we tied them all to the railings. Everybody bought a balloon. We tied it all to the Harris fencing and round. And we had a couple of artists playing the guitar and singing. And then we had a little party up at the community centre. Everybody walked back up there after the bulldozer had done the last house kind of thing. Although it wasn't really the last house because one of them wouldn't come out, so we had to leave that one up. But he's gone now. He's on the College Road now. But the last few houses that was done, we watched them go down. And that was good. And that must have been about 6 years. Oh, 19. I can't remember the date. I know they're all, I mean, it's all built on now. Be early 90s, I think. I'm just trying to think. Linda would know the date. Marion would know the date.
You're describing a lot of what you're saying seems to be a real spirit, like whether it was the glue sniffing, whether it was the rubbish, whether it's you know, talking to the council about the gym, whether it's calling up for the wrestler. It seems like there's a certain spirit of...
community. Yeah, there was a definite community spirit there. Yeah. I remember the one time somebody got some funding to have the school children. And they did something in the school holidays, and I had to open up for that. And I think they had about 40 children, and were dropped off by the parents, and they had to be picked up by the parents. And it went down really well. And that's what we tried to do, keep the children occupied as well, because a lot was going on. And I think if you get the young children to appreciate where they live and respect where they live, you'll get teenagers that will respect it, and you'll get older people that respect it. In a lot of areas, they haven't done anything for the children, and they just run riot, don't they? So we try, and I know Wing Lodge tries to put something on for the children now. And we're doing an event on Enderby Park again. We did one last year. We had 127 children and 77 adults come to it. We were lucky we had the weather, but we had the fire service there, we had a climbing wall, we had crazy golf, we had face painting, an art craft, we had an extend group do what they do on the, we had some of the teenagers. They were invited, but it was a bit young for them, but they came along and sat on the bench and watched. Oh, and we had a steel drum gap band, and we're hoping to do all that again in April.
And that was as Friends of Perry Common?
Friends of Perry
Common. Can you just say a little bit about Friends of Perry Common?
Friends of Perry Common.
Your involvement with it?
I'm chair of Friends of Perry Common for Moss Sins. Witten Lodge got some funding 5-6 years ago, and they seconded one of the girls from Birmingham City Council to do it, because we didn't have any staff then. Witten Lodge was all purely volunteers. So any services we wanted, we had to second people in. And we seconded her in to run that and spend that money. And that was when we was doing things around the area, for the area, the green part of it. And when the funding ran out, the council weren't involved anymore. But the idea was to start a Friends of group up. That's when we started the Friends of Perry Common up. Since then, we've opened Enderby Park. We've had two events on there. We've got an extend group going that we've got funding for. It started off with Chris. She said, "I don't think anybody's going to come." I said, "Oh, I'll come. I'll get a few people to come." So we do it at the Perry Tree Centre on the end of Dovedale Road. They had, they've got like a gym there where people who've had heart attacks and had falls go to, but they only get 6 weeks free training kind of thing. Well, they recommended them to come down to the extend group. We've ended up with about 25 people down at that extend group every Tuesday, 10 till 11. Then, because Sycamore Court, there's a lot of people that can't get out at Sycamore Court, Chris said, "Have we got enough money in the pot for me to do another class?" So I said, "Yeah, as long as they don't charge you room hire." So she come up here and seen the manager here, and that was approved. And I think she's got about 12, 14 every Thursday here. And then the vicar caught on and said, "I've got a little bit of funding, can you do it at the church?" So she has about 12 and 18 at the church. So that's 3 times a week now, Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays, that people are getting out, and they're building friendships. Of the group at Perry Tree, about 4 or 5 of them stay down and have a coffee and sit and chat and often have the dinner there and leave about half two. So, you know, that's doing a lot for your mental agility as well as keeping your body. And it's keeping people active and it's giving them a reason to live, you know, to come out. I mean, Chris had got a funeral this week and she said, I'm not going to be able to do Tuesday because I've got a funeral. And they went, what time's the funeral? She's 12 o'clock. Then they said, well, can't we come early? So they come at 9:30 till 10:30 rather than miss it. So what does that tell you? It tells you that people are really enjoying it. So next thing is we've got to get some more funding to keep it going because we don't charge anything. Everything is, all the sessions are free. We know someone else has got some money to do the same kind of thing, but they want to charge £350 a go. People can't afford it. You know, pensioners on their own. You know, a lot of them, when they're on their own, they can't afford to heat the houses in today's climate. So coming out for 4 hours, that's not costing them anything. They get the bus or whatever. They come there, they have a coffee, they have some lunch, and they go back 4.5 hours heating they've saved as well. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts, really. If you keep people active, they're not going to rely on being on their own all the time. And they're starting, oh, well, what are you doing on Friday? I'm doing my shopping. Well, our so-and-so's coming with the car. Do you want to come with us and we can go and do all the shopping together? You know, it's another day out. And that's what we're trying to promote.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. We're just running out of battery. I'm gonna change. That's fantastic, Teresa. Let me just change it, and I've got two more questions to ask. And let me just get the. That's great. I want to hear about that man that wouldn't move.
That what?
Do you remember the man that wouldn't move?
Oh yeah, Birdman.
Just tell me as much, when I put the battery in, just tell me as much as you can remember about that situation. And then the other thing would be your time on the board. Do you know what I mean? What's that been like? So, yeah, then I've got one more question and that will be that.
We did become a guide neighbourhood, you know.
A what?
A guide neighbourhood.
What's that? Like going and helping other neighbourhoods?
Going and seeing other neighbourhoods.
Telling them about the story.
Telling them our story. And then finding out their story.
Yeah, Marion told me that.
Yeah. Uh-oh. We went all over the place.
Yeah.
Marion. I don't know whether I want to say about the Birdman too much because he's still living on this.
No, you can. Les has already said.
Has he?
Yeah. Les has said.
So this is why,
I'm asking you, because it's good to have different viewpoints.
I didn't know him.
Just whatever you knew of it. It doesn't. Just whatever you knew. It doesn't have to be.
I only know that he got an ovary and he wouldn't move until the council.
Because he couldn't get a like for like, that's why.
Yeah.
And also, he could not only couldn't get like for like, but he would have, his benefits and, you know what I mean, a lot of things would have changed had he moved. So he stuck to his guns.
Yeah.
But what I heard was him sticking to his guns didn't make him very popular.
No.
Right? So if you could just explain sort of why
well,
that
he
was.
It didn't really bother me because he was up that end of the road. But I know a lot of people were saying, you know, if it weren't for him, there'd be more houses built down here and that.
Okay. Right. If you could just tell me a little bit about the man who wouldn't move, who dug his heels in.
The man who wouldn't move. He couldn't get like for like to start with. He'd extending his property quite a bit, and he got a big garage on the side, and he got a big aviary, and where they were offering him, he couldn't put a garage on the side and he couldn't have his aviary, so he stuck out. He stuck out a long time. He was left there surrounded by nothing for, I'm sure it was a couple of years, if not more. It was a long time. And when we were having the final knockdown, and we had this little party, they knocked the last few houses down. His was still standing. And I can remember he went to the papers and said, they never knocked the last house down because I'm still there. But he moved quite local. And I believe the council built him a garage on the side of his house and that, and he got what he wanted in the end.
And what was the reaction from other people?
A lot of people were saying, I wish I'd have stuck out for it. Because a lot of them took the first offer because they were threatened with, if you don't sell to us, we'll compulsory purchase it anyway. So they just done it and sold back to them. And then ended up paying rent, sometimes in their own property, for 18 months until it was needed to be knocked down. And some said, good on him, he's stuck it out, and I wish I'd have done it because he's got everything he wanted. Others said he was just being stubborn, and, you know, so I didn't know the man personally, I just know the stories I heard. But in a way, I think he was right to stick out because his home was his castle and he wasn't getting what he was promised, like for like. And I think sometimes the bully boys are, you know, they think they can get away with it.
Generally, what was the relationship like between the council and the residents?
I found them very okay, the ones I've spoken to, and, you know, they did a lot of work on it, and they worked hard, really, because if you can imagine, you've got 900 and something properties that have got to come down. You've got another 159 or 160 that are going to stay. They've had to build around those that have got to stay. In hindsight, they would have been better knocking them down because then you would have had, you know, the same gardens for each one. Some of them have got post-stamp gardens, others have got a great big field, really, because they've come on the corner and wasn't enough to build a house there, but so they've given the land, you know. And what it was at first, it was, you wouldn't know which houses are council houses and which house are bought and which house are housing association. Because when Witten Lodge was formed, the council gave Witten Lodge the land when it was cleared. Witten Lodge couldn't afford to build on it, so they sold a third of it to a private developer, a third of it to housing associations, and the other third we raised a mortgage on and built our own. They're still social housing because they still belong to a housing association. But there was three housing associations on the estate that bought the land. They've changed names now. It was Bromford and two others. I can't remember now what the houses are called now because they've changed names. But it was quite exciting, really, seeing, you know, which ones was going to be our houses and which ones was going to be private houses. I mean, Dovedale. I was quite involved with the building of Witten Lodge houses on Dovedale Road. I went to the site meetings and everything, and I would have loved to have swapped one of them for my house because it was ultra modern. I mean, they got two living rooms, they got three bedrooms or four bedrooms, they've got a toilet downstairs as you come in, you know, like a little cloakroom. And the size of the gardens aren't bad, they were all fenced for them. All turfed, so they had nothing to do really when they moved in, just moved the furniture in, and they are houses for life, they are, so that if you can't get up the stairs, there is room to put a stair lift in. If you're in a wheelchair, you can go through all the doors and turn them round. There's also a space in the lounge where they can make a lift that goes straight up to the bedroom, which then can be the wall can be changed so that they can go straight into the bathroom. So they are really well thought out. I was involved with them, and I was involved with the ones that the council built on Dugdale and Capilano. Went to all their site meetings, and Witten Lodges got 20 of them. So altogether, Witten Lodges got, I think it's 183 properties. 43 are in Sycamore Court, the majority are one bedrooms, and there's a few two bedrooms.
Hang on, I just ran out of another card. That was really good detail, very good detail there, about what the houses were. They're also solar powered, aren't they?
Yeah, and the people who did move into the houses when they were built did get like for like. That's why you find quite a few people that are in a three bedroom house and there's only one of them, but that's what they had before. Well, there might have been a couple, but they had like for like, so they can't change that.
Fantastic. Now, this might sound like a bit of a negative question, but some people were not happy, and some people are still not happy. So, without names necessarily, can you just explain a little bit about what that's about?
Some people think that Witten Lodge have got too much, but they've worked for it. And there were local residents that started that off. Yes, we've got a lot of staff there now, but the staff are having to raise funds for the jobs, if you like. You know, through grants and things like that. Sometimes you can please some people, but you can't please all the people. Some people will moan about anything. If you give them a bar of chocolate, they'll want a box. And if you want, give them a box, they'll want a great big tin. So my view is live and let live. And anything that we can do to improve the estate and bring a community together is a plus. Moaning is a negative. If you're going to moan about something, do something about it. Join in. You know, nobody says you can't join. If you live on this estate and you want to join Friends of Perry Common, Witten Lodge Volunteers, one of the churches run different things. You know, all you've got to do is go out and join. Ask. I haven't heard anybody say, I went and asked if I could join that, and they said no. So the more people that join, the more people that get involved, the more people build a community. And you've got to respect everybody. It's no good saying, well, don't like her down the road. She don't change her curtains often enough, or she don't do this or she don't do that. If you don't like them, don't get involved with them. But don't moan about it. And if they do something to you that you don't like, stand up for yourself.
Absolutely, absolutely. I quite agree. But people did get... Did some people... How was it chosen for people to get what property? How was that process?
The council was very involved. What Witten Lodge's properties was that they had, like what we call our own properties. The council found us the tenants, and then we interviewed the tenants. We couldn't ask them anything, but we could be there. I remember one family, and they're not on the estate now, but she came with her partner, and she said he wasn't moving in. She wanted the property, and she'd got four children. He got four or five children, but he wasn't moving in, he got his own property. So we sort of asked a few questions. They came about half an hour early for the interview. They said they didn't know where he It was, so they'd got their friend with them, who had been a taxi driver. So he sat in on the interview because they wanted him there. And she went on about what she was going to do if she got the house and all the rest of it. And she wanted to know where the house was so she could have a look at it. We said, well, it's very close to here, but we can't tell you where because it's still a building site and you're not allowed on the site yet. We're just seeing who's going to be offered the property. You know, you're one of three that have applied for it kind of thing. Oh, but I would love it. And then she was going on and she said, out of her own mouth, we didn't ask her, well, my uncle used to live in Dovedale Road and my other uncle lived in Capilano, and yet she didn't know where it was. And so we thought, well, that's strange, like, you know. Anyway, she kept saying that definitely a partner wasn't moving in because it wouldn't be big enough for all the children. So anyway, she got the property. She moved in. So did her partner. So then there was 6 or 7 children in a 4-bed house, which we wouldn't have let it to because it was too small. She said they hadn't moved in, but she'd registered them all at school. So we knew they'd moved in. Anyway, cut a long story short, they did a moonlight flit. And they'd been in there 2.5 years. They'd never paid any electric, any gas, and they had completely wrecked the place. It cost Witten Lodge about £6,000, to put it right. There was doors missing. They had dogs, and they locked the dogs into the downstairs toilet and took the pipe off there so the dogs could have a drink any time they wanted it. Oh, it was horrendous. So you can't always get it right, even if you do interview them, because they tell you lies. So after that, if we wanted to interview anybody, we interviewed them in their home to see what sort of property they were living in. And some of them was, you know, really damn poor, and you could see that they were trying their best to keep everything together, and they've been great tenants.
And the people who are generally here, from what I see, are quite happy to be in Witten Lodge.
Yeah. I don't think we've had any of them leave, except a couple that have bought properties in other parts, like moved down to Weston or on to the other side of Stafford. But generally, we haven't lost any, except when they've had the big calling. And they died.
Theresa.
You know, I mean, it happens, doesn't it? But the majority don't want to leave. Because there's everything here. And if everybody respects it and respects each other, it's a wonderful place to live. Yeah.
Theresa, you've been absolutely fantastic. I would say possibly one of the best, you know, very balanced, and I really mean it, you know, you forget your dates, but you remember incidents,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? We can fill in the dates elsewhere,
yeah.
But you remember incidents, you remember the spirit of the place, and you're a credit to the community, I have to say. Inspiring.
We did become a guide neighbourhood some years ago, and that entailed us going to other neighbourhoods and seeing what they were doing, and then coming to us. And we made quite a few friendships from around the country, actually. And they seen what we were doing, and we'd get a notice saying, we've done that, you know. And that was nice, because everybody got the same problems, really. People moving in and not taking care of properties. People saying, oh, I ain't going to live by them, scruffy, and then moving out. And that isn't the thing. You don't need to move out. You need to make them toe the line, if you like. And that's what the council thought at first. If we put bad tenants in between good tenants, the good tenants will show them what to do. But it doesn't always work. But if you've got a bad tenant that really wants to become part of it, and you encourage them, they can be very good tenants then. We went to quite a lot of places, and I remember going to one place where the places was all derelict around them, and the girl said, these houses are changing hands for £1 in a card game. because nobody wants them, because who wants to live round here? And then an organisation got the idea, we'll make them look lived in. And they boarded up the windows, because they were boarded up, but they painted them. And they painted them with curtains and people sitting in, and so that you looked at them and you thought, oh, somebody's in there, they're having the tea. You know, and they were just boarded up houses. But after that, people that were still living in houses started to think, well, it's nice. And then they started letting them. And they got quite a community going in the end. And even the shops, if there was an empty shop and it had got shutters, it had got to be done by an artist so it didn't look derelict. And I thought that was a great idea. You know, if you'd been a veg shop before, it had got to be done as a veg shop or a hairdresser's or whatever it was originally. Had to have the painting on it. Because they turned around then and said, then a veg person will come and say, oh yeah, that's all right, I can do that for veg. I've already got me shutter done. You know, and they were starting to let them on them grounds. And that seems quite simple, but it was quite effective. It also gave an artist some funding to do it and to stop graffiti. Because if you get an artist to do it and get the local kids involved, they won't destroy it. But if you leave it empty, that's a breakout.
Fantastic. And finally, what's it like being a director of Woodson Lodge Community Association?
Well, I'm like a mushroom, really. Keep me in the dark, feed me rubbish. No, I've enjoyed my time as a director. It gets quite busy sometimes, and it gets quite tiring as I've got older. I mean, I've been a director now for about 10 or 15 years. My health is failing. But I try and do what I can. So I keep up with the green space and things like that. The other thing Friends of Perry Common done was take 105 people to the pantomime this Christmas. And we only had £990 to do it. And we went to Sutton Town Hall. And it was really good. Everybody had a bag of sweets. So we did it with the church. And they had a coach for people that couldn't get there. So out of the funding, adults only paid £5 and the children went for free. So I think we're doing good there.
Fantastic, Teresa. Just to recount, are you happy for this interview to be archived for the local history group and for the city of Birmingham?
Yeah.
And we will give you an opportunity to review this. If there's anything you want to add or take out, we'll give you the opportunity in about 6, 7, 8 weeks or so.
Yeah, great.
Is that okay?
That's great.
Thank you very, very much, Teresa. That was gorgeous. Gorgeous. I'm just going to run and try and